Hello and welcome to Instant Transmission, a podcast where we discuss everything Dragon Ball and how to pick up chicks like Spopovich. The world has experienced peace for several years after the defeat of Cell, but everything changed after our hero, Gohan, experienced the most insufferable, unimaginable pain known as high school. Thankfully, Kai cut nearly none of the filler, so I hope you're hungry, because we're about to jump into Dragon Ball Kai's World Tournament Arc Part 2. I'm your host, Dayton, and once again, I'm joined by my co-host, Todd.
Hi!
Tonight, we'll be covering Kai's episodes 109 through 115, I think. Gohan has struggled to balance saving the world and keeping a normal high school life, and eventually his alter ego, the Great Saiyaman, was unmasked by Mr. Satan's daughter, Videl, and is blackmailed into joining the World Martial Arts Tournament. Goku, Vegeta, Piccolo, Krillin, 18, and even Goten and Trunks all decide to join in on the action. The kids easily make it to the finals, with Trunks pulling out a very narrow win against Goten. The adults are about ready to kick things off, and that's where tonight's episode begins. And with all of that covered, was there anything you wanted to add before we got things started, Todd?
No, I think we can jump right into this one.
All right, well, we're going to jump into episode 109, Restless Foreboding, A Mysterious Warrior Appears. And this episode begins with Hercule dragging himself off the floor after Trunks easily had smashed him out of the ring, and everyone thinks the champ just threw the match to make the kid look good.
Hell yeah. I do want to say, I think this is episode 108, but it's also hard to tell because these numbers are ridiculous. It's number 11 in the Boo arc, I guess. But yeah, Hercule basically, I mean, makes it look like he threw the match.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he's a showboater. He's kind of a con man, and everyone's talking about how he's the champ, right? And it's good that he gave that kid the win out there. And Trunks is just, he's in disbelief. He's not sure if this guy is serious.
I deeply love that Mr. Satan, he has everybody underneath his thumb. Like, he has everyone so brainwashed that they're like, oh, the only conceivable possibility is that he threw the match.
Yeah, I mean, it's really funny. And I mean, it's in line with his character, right? And so, yeah, Trunks leaves the victor and Hercule leaves with his pride intact. So I guess it's a win-win.
It's so good to me, too, that Trunks is confused. Like, he can't figure this guy out. He's like, did I whoop this guy's ass or did he throw the fight? Like, what is going on here?
Yeah. And I mean, it's fun, though. But either way, it's the end of the kids tournament arc at this point. Trunks has his victory after a really fun fight with Goten. And Hercule has made his appearance. So now we're moving into the adults. And we've got a nice shot of Goku, Piccolo, Krillin, 18, and all Vegeta arriving at the tournament preparation area as their matches are about to begin.
I kind of love, we get a little bit of Krillin's attitude here about the tournament. And Krillin is like so cocky, at least about, not about himself necessarily, but about his group as a whole. He's like, nobody holds a candle to our group. It's like a fun, really, it's a fun piece of insight into Krillin's mind. But Krillin knows where he stands. He's basically telling all his friends, like, hey, if I have to go against you, take it easy on me.
So, I mean, it's, you know, he's still got a chance to at least, you know, win some battles against some people. So it's crazy how strong Krillin is, yet how out of his league he is in this tournament.
Yeah, 100%. There's a few really good beats with Krillin coming up, though, that I want to talk to you about, Dayton. But first, we get to see, again, back to Goten and Trunks with them. They're not satisfied. They were upset to begin with that they had to be separated from the adults and put into the junior division. And so Trunks specifically takes it upon himself to devise a plan to get him and Goten into the adults division, and it involves Mighty Mask.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, it's kids being kids, but it's definitely Trunks being a little bit more devious than maybe Goten would have been on his own or what we would have seen of Goku when Goku was a kid. Trunks decides that the best way to get into this match is to find someone's costume, knock the guy out, and then enter as that person. And unfortunately, Mighty Mask is that candidate. And so Mighty Mask is lured away with the hopes of a cute girl. And then when he's off on his own near some brush, he's easily knocked out and the kids begin donning Mighty Mask's costume.
I mean, this is already telling of what we can expect from the adult tournament participants, right? Mighty Mask is one of the top 16. He was supposed to go in and compete against the best of the best, and he got knocked out by Trunks with a single chop to the neck.
It's pretty fun. And I mean, it's one of those things where we knew that the only people that could probably give Goten and Trunks a real challenge would have been the adults. So it's kind of maybe teasing towards that eventuality.
Yeah, 100%. I'm going to keep harping on this, but I love the writing for Goten and Trunks in the Buu arc. They are fantastic characters. I like how mischievous Trunks is. I like how innocent Goten is. He's like, oh, we shouldn't do this. We're going to get in trouble. And I just like this gag as a whole. Like, this is a quality Dragon Ball gag. It feels like harkening back to the original Dragon Ball in a good way.
I mean, it's literally Trunks riding around on Goten's shoulders normally you would see it in a trench coat, but in here they're in Mighty Mask's outfit. And the first thing they have to overcome is the fact that Goten can't see. And so they stumble into things until he pokes a couple holes into it.
Yeah, it's goofy. It's fun. It's silly. I don't feel like it. Like, it's going to stick around for a little while. I still don't feel like it really overstays its welcome. We'll get to see them participate, well, eventually, in some actual fighting. But first, we get a little bit more insight into our adult participants. Actually, it's mostly just them eating food to start.
I love this, though, because, I mean, we've seen how many times where all the Z Fighters are together eating, and we see a lot of Goku in particular just eating everything around him, right? He's just devouring everything within reach. And Videl is able to walk in as an innocent bystander and watch the Z Fighters just demolishing probably tens of thousands of calories worth of food. And I mean, they don't even stop to breathe. It's pretty disgusting.
It's a classic anime gag, classic Dragon Ball gag. It's still funny here, mostly because of the inclusion of Videl, but particularly because of, again, Krillin's dialogue. Phenomenal. Like, Krillin, in front of Videl and Gohan, says something along the lines of, man, do Saiyans even have any sort of end to their stomachs? And Videl's like, Saiyans? What's that? And Gohan bashes Krillin upside the head like, I told you not to say anything.
I mean, there's a lot that Videl needs to be filled in on, and I probably one of the early things being like, yeah, like, I'm kind of an alien and my dad's an alien. It's probably not a great, like, first note to kick off a relationship with.
Yeah, it's complicated, right? And Gohan's already trying to keep a low profile when it comes to school, and it's just tricky. It's complicated. It's fun to watch Gohan tiptoe around all of these situations and details because of Videl. And then it's fun to see Krillin also teasing Gohan like, hey, what about your girlfriend?
I mean, I love it. And that's always been in line with Krillin's character. He loves poking fun at that stuff. He's a fan of the babes. He, you know, grabbed himself one. So he's on the sideline now, but he's cheering.
Yeah, 100%. This does move us forward as we, I think, for the first time, get to see, I don't want to say their names, but at least not yet. We get to see these two ominous figures. One of them kind of like small purple skin, white mohawk, these like strange clothes. And the other, almost the inverse of that, this like tall, long hair, red skin, similar odd clothes, but this is kind of like filling that trope that we've talked about in the past of Akira Toriyama likes to introduce new characters in pairs, and he frequently likes them to be kind of opposite of one another as we get introduced into these new these two new fighters who are in the top 16 here.
Yeah, and it's a very strange kind of encounter, as the shorter one with the spiked hair more or less knows who Goku is and mentions that he heard of the legend of Goku, but he wanted to see if it was true for himself. And after they shake hands, he sort of just leaves. And the Z fighters are left very confused.
Yeah, there's a little bit of dialogue between them that kind of suggests that these two new fighters, they might make the tournament more interesting than they expected. So there's this implication that these guys, they could be powerful, or they maybe have some sort of strange gimmick that might make them challenging to fight. But we as the audience, as well as I think our Z fighters, are a little uncertain about what that could be in detail.
Yeah, and we're kind of left there, right? We move on to the fighters going to the number drawing area. And as everyone's standing around, we notice the two mysterious people that we just met that are there. We've got all of our Z fighters, but there's also two other fighters that seem to stand out a little bit, and they're large, muscular, bald men that don't seem to do anything but scowl in anger. But other than that, it's the rest of them seem like, you know, Joe Schmoes.
Yeah, there's a handful of other guys who are, like you said, pretty standard schmucks, I guess. The interesting thing about these two figures too, who are shaved heads and kind of muscle bound with bulging veins, they have, both of them have these black M's, the letter M, drawn out on their foreheads, which is an interesting detail that's going to come up later. But this turns into everybody drawing lots to see who they're going to be matched up against in the first round of the tournament.
Yeah, and the pairings start happening, and we see that Gohan is fighting one of the mysterious new warriors. Krillin is fighting, I believe, somebody who is from original Dragon Ball, if I'm not mistaken. I think he's a throwback character, is he not?
I don't think he's a throwback. I don't think he showed up himself in the original Dragon Ball, but he has a very similar character design to kind of like that era and some of those characters.
Okay, then yeah, he's fighting. If he was probably a nobody if he did ever show up, and he's still a nobody now. Okay, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the big surprise, though, before this episode comes to an end, is that Goku is fighting Vegeta right off the bat in the first round, which normally you would assume is kind of the grand finale, right?
I mean, this is almost a giveaway to what is going to happen. Or not specifically that. I guess it's a giveaway to indicate that this is not a normal tournament, right? Because like you said, if this were any other tournament, something would happen to set Goku and Vegeta on opposite brackets such that they would fight each other in the finals. Having them fight in the very first round feels anticlimactic, right? It feels like there's something wrong with that setup from a narrative perspective.
Yeah, and I don't know. Things aren't right, and they're kind of setting everything up to be kind of chaos in a way where you know in the back of your head that something's going to happen. You're just not sure what.
Yeah, 100%. I think we kind of push forward, like Goten and Trunks as Mighty Mass, they get their lot. We kind of push forward, though, Videl and Hercule, they get their numbers, as well as our strange muscle-bound figures. But we basically get our full bracket.
That happens in the next episode, though, which is,
oh,
according to the wiki, episode 110, what happened to Piccolo, an unexpected outcome in the first. And this is where we get Piccolo being paired off with one of the mysterious fighters, 18, and Mr. Satan paired off. And Videl is paired off against one of the bald rage men known as Spopovich.
There we go. I jumped forward a little bit, thinking that they did the whole bracket in the one episode.
They split it up for some reason. I don't know why.
It's sometimes with Kai, they have weird episode endings, I think, just because they had to cram things in. But moving into the next episode as they finish the lots. And yeah, I think 18 is supposed to be up against Hercule or Mr. Satan, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it's such a funny matchup to me just because it's Hercule, you know, big macho man, kind of larger than life character. And then 18, who is the complete opposite, right? Like, she is not showboaty at all. She's all serious, all business. And she's also like not a giant person like Mr. Satan. So even just the stature between the two characters is different.
Yeah, almost entirely opposite. She's pretty quiet for the most part, especially nowadays. But this kind of moves us forward as our fighters prepare for the first few rounds. We kind of get the impression that Piccolo is up against, and I think they might have given us the names now, of our two strangers.
I'm willing to just say the names at this point so we can stop beating around the bush.
Yes, it's easier. We've got Shin, who is the small stranger who is like purple with the white spiky hair, and Kabito. Shin is up against Piccolo in the first round, or as Piccolo calls himself, Ma Junior. And Kabito is, I think Kabito's up against Gohan in the first round, right?
That's correct. Yep. And Piccolo he's kind of sweating and kind of freaking out a little bit, at least as far as Piccolo goes. And even the other Z fighters are starting to take notice of how stressed out Piccolo seems to be for his matchup.
Yeah, which is, I don't know, it's strange for Piccolo, especially because, I mean, heck, Piccolo's what, maybe the fourth strongest fighter here, presumably? Like, he's no slouch by any means.
Yeah, and Piccolo is normally kind of the calm tactical person of the group at this point. He's usually the person who's able to kind of think things through and work things out, which to some degree probably does make Piccolo nervous because he has no idea what he's really up against. And I could see how that would stress him out.
Yeah, 100%. We do kind of move forward pretty much into the first round, which is Krillin against, I'm not going to lie, I didn't make a note of this guy's name.
I didn't make a note of this guy's name either. He's big, boisterous man who's also kind of a jerk. He's, you know, he's commenting on Krillin's stature and stuff like that. We know how this match is going to go, right? And
100%.
The thing that I'm mostly excited about is how pumped announcer man is to have all of these old school fighters finally back in the ring. Like, he's just like it's his freaking birthday out there. He's so happy.
I'll say it again. I love announcer man, and he is such a big fan of our Z fighters. I think he even has some commentary about like, this is going to be the best tournament of all time. Now that he knows like that Goku and Krillin are here, and he knows their history too. Like, he's watched them come up and fight. So he even like announces Krillin as an old combatant in some of the previous tournaments who took a long break and he's back. As this fight gets underway, I mean, we even get like a little flashback of this big, boisterous guy beating up on people. He kind of dances around and bounces around the ring, showing how nimble he is. And then
he
says,
the other fighters kind of like they're doing kind of the really old school kind of breakdowns of, yeah, he used to brutalize people, and once he gets going, he don't stop, sort of thing. Like, they're going through all the same motions that they would for any other villain, and I freaking love it because for them, he is the villain, right? He's their fighting levels villain. Even though Krillin's way out of his league, that guy is a villain to the normal people.
Yeah, 100%. I also really like, too, before this fight actually engages between the two combatants, we get a shot of the crowd where Krillin's daughter, Marin, she's worried. She sees this big guy who's, you know, like 10 times the size of Krillin on screen. And she's like, oh, I don't want my daddy to get hurt. And I love this piece of dialogue where Yamcha says, don't worry, Marin, your father's the strongest man on the planet. Which is true.
He's arguably the strongest human on the planet. That's a pretty cool feat.
Yeah. It like that line and like those details, and then as we get into the details of this fight, I want you to describe this fight because this is your boy, but these are things Krillin deserves some fucking recognition, man.
I mean, it's not really much of a fight. It's we see the giant man kind of jump backwards and do some somersaults, and he's talking just all this trash. He even tells Krillin, like, go ahead, like, I'll give you the first shot. There's no way you can hurt me. And Krillin just unleashes this quick little flurry of blows that sends this ginormous man flying. And then Krillin just has his hands in his pockets and just kind of just leaves the ring. Like, he didn't even break a sweat. It was almost kind of, you could tell it was a waste of his time to even go out there, was kind of the attitude he had.
Yeah, he didn't care. I mean, he also didn't care. Like, he was quick to put this dude down. He's, you know, this guy means nothing to him. But I'll say this, while it's not much of a fight, I'm happy to see Krillin get a win every once in a while.
That's right. He made it past the first round, baby. He's moving up.
It's something. It's better than he gets a lot of the time.
So, yeah, Krillin wins his round. And then we've got Piccolo and Shen next. And they proceed into the ring. And this is where things start getting a little bit, I would say, actually tense.
It is. So especially for anyone's first time watching this who doesn't know who Shen is and what his powers are, we sit here with Piccolo uncertain of how to engage in this fight for a few moments, maybe even minutes, it feels like. And with just very sparse dialogue between the two of them, as Shen kind of expresses, like, you'll find out why I'm here soon enough, Piccolo concedes the match.
Yeah, and the thing that really freaks Piccolo out is that Shen is actually responding to his internal thought when he speaks. And so it's at that point that Piccolo just bows out. This is too much. Something in his body is telling him that he shouldn't be in this matchup. And so it was almost kind of an instinctual decision to me for him to leave this match. It wasn't a tactical one. It was just everything in his being decided that the match was over for him.
It's very unlike Piccolo. Piccolo is a warrior. He's tactical. It's strange for him to give up a fight without even starting it, without even attempting it. But that kind of gives us, I mean, it doesn't give us much insight, but it gives us an idea as to what to expect from Shen here as we kind of move forward from that match on to Spopovich and Videl.
Yes, these two are up next. And as they go to enter the ring, we see Shen kind of pass by them as they enter and he leaves. And you see him kind of look back and he seems quite interested in this fighter as he's leaving the ring. And we're kind of left on that note at the end of this episode that he's taken an interest to the Spopovich guy. And that's kind of the cliffhanger that the episode ends on.
Yeah, I think that pretty much takes us into the next one to start that match.
Yes, it is. According to the wiki, episode 111, an eerie entity. Who exactly is Spopovich? And this is where we see Videl entering the ring, and we see the cheers of her adoring fans as everyone more or less loves Videl, right? She's the daughter of Mr. Satan. She's kind of a superhero. I mean, what is there not to like?
It's kind of funny because when she arrived with Mr. Satan and Mr. Satan was getting all that attention, she kind of shied away from it. But here, she's not hamming it up like Mr. Satan does, but she seems pleased with the attention that she's getting.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of it is there's actually a whole section of police officers and city defenders who all really seem to adore Videl.
Yeah. I mean, rightly so. She's helped them in many bad situations in town. So this is, I mean, we're as the audience, kind of waiting to see what Spopovich has to offer here, because we kind of have an idea of where Videl's at. And so the match starts and Videl is, she's on top of the entire situation. She's delivering blow after blow to Spopovic, who seems to have very little in response to Videl's assault.
Yeah, and we see Spopovic being delivered blow after blow. We see him even being knocked back and knocked hard to the floor. But despite this, the big man just gets back up and keeps fighting. And this happens again and again. And every time he gets back up and keeps fighting, it seems like Videl's giving it to him, but the man just does not stay down.
Yeah, 100%. I don't want to pull away from the fight too much, but there is an important cutaway here as we get some dialogue between Piccolo and Shin following their fight, or lack of fight. And Piccolo asks, is Shin the Grand Kai? And Kabuto is basically like insulted by that insinuation and says, no, this is the Supreme Kai, which has Piccolo on his back foot even more so, as we kind of get the impression that the Supreme Kai is not only above like King Kai, who trained Goku, but then there's the Grand Kai that we kind of skipped over because he's filler. But then on top of that is the Supreme Kai, basically like the god of gods for this realm.
Yeah, and we're kind of left on that cliffhanger for a moment as Shin's actual identity is actually revealed. And we go back to the fight. And I mean, it's a pretty brutal like battle at this point. We see a heavy knee being delivered to Videl, and we see her lean over, kind of gasping for air. I'm sorry, she delivers a brutal knee. And this is where we see Spopovic kind of lean over, gasping for air. And it seems like Videl's finally won the match until he miraculously gets up once more, just bloodied and battered. And we see this wicked smile creasing his veiny, gross face. And it's at about this point that Goku and Vegeta start catching on that something's really off about this guy.
I love it. Is the briefest of scenes, but it is just an exchange of looks between Vegeta and Goku, like knowing looks as they're like something is wrong here. This is, and I'm going to talk about this the entire way through the Buu arc. I love this Goku. I love the like martial arts mastery, very, very intelligent as far as fighting and combat goes. That Goku is really good in the Buu arc.
And he's very in tune, right? Like he's actually watching the match and actually paying attention. Like these fighters are, you know, they don't hold a candle to how powerful he is, but he's still watching and paying attention, right? Like I love that about this.
I like it a lot too. We even get kind of like Gohan on the sidelines, and Gohan is rooting and cheering for Videl, obviously, but he's excited to see how well she's doing until the fight turns against Videl. And Spopovic now starts putting the hurt on this woman who is less than half his size.
Yeah, and I mean, it's brutal. The first couple blows hit Videl hard, knocking her clear across the arena. And we see kind of the toll of the fight beginning to take its effect on her. It's at this point, it's not that she's taken too much damage. It's more that she's just exhausted. She's kept up this relentless offense for a while now. I mean, delivering severe blow after blow to Spopovic, who just seems to absorb it and get back up. But even though she's taking a beating, we see her get knocked down and get back up on her feet. But she doesn't seem to pop up as easily as Spopovic has.
No, she even takes a kick to the face that knocks her clean across the ring and should have knocked her out of the ring. However, she's been training with her boy Gohan, and so she, I mean, uses that training and calls on it and manages to levitate, to halt her momentum, to keep her from getting basically a ring out, and then she floats back into the ring. There's at this point, now that she is like very heavily on the back foot, we do get some dialogue too from Goku saying, she should have just let herself get knocked out of the ring. Like, she is in danger being in that ring with that man at this point.
Yeah, it's kind of this back and forth where you have this moment of just like, oh yeah, she can fly, good for her. And then we flip over to Goku, who kind of gives that dark message. And so you're kind of on this emotional roller coaster of you're rooting for Videl, but you also know in the back of your head that things are going to get pretty nasty here.
Yes, 100%. I mean, we even get like Hercule being told that Spofovich is handing it to Videl. And he just doesn't even believe it. He doesn't think that Videl could possibly lose.
Yeah, he tells the guy to check his glasses.
I love it. this turns into, though, I mean, again, Videl is not going to give up on this fight. She just starts basically delivering as much power as she can into her attacks, delivering one kick to Spopovich's head.
I love this part.
Go ahead. If you want to describe it, it's brutal.
Oh, yeah. Videl's on the back foot and she's bloodied up, but she's defiant. And like you said, this is where she kind of dumps a lot of her power into this vicious kick that lands on the side of Spopovich's head. And we see his face literally turn around just 180 degrees, looking backwards. His neck is like twisted and pulled sideways as he stumbles backwards and eventually falls to the ground. And there's this kind of shock and awe of silence that falls over the arena as Videl even falls to the floor in horror, thinking that she just killed a man.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of get the impression, like, Videl has helped the police quite a bit, but you get the impression she hasn't killed a person before. This is kind of like, I mean, she's still a young girl. This is kind of devastating to her in her mind. Even the announcer basically is like, this is an unfortunate event. This man died in our ring, and we are also unfortunately going to have to disqualify Videl for using lethal force. And as this announcement is being given, we see Spopovich get up and get onto his feet.
Yeah, and as he's standing up, I mean, it's kind of a Frankenstein moment as everyone's watching this monster come back to life. Videl's in complete awe as she's watching this man literally reach up, grab his own head, like pull it up and twist it and kind of snap it back into place as he just smiles this wicked bloody smile at her. And unfortunately, Videl doesn't get any time to kind of figure out what the hell's going on as Spopovich immediately starts stomping his way towards her, taking advantage of her dropped guard and delivering a return kick right to Videl's nose, causing a stream of blood to start pouring down her face.
Yeah, Videl's only retaliation here is to now fly up into the air, maybe to get a breather and kind of reassess this fight, reassess her strategy. But we quickly find out that Spopovich can fly as he flies up to meet Videl. And then not only can he fly, but he extends a hand out, drawing in energy, and blasts a ki blast at Videl, knocking her out of the sky.
So I love some of the detail here where Videl's kind of watching this happen. But Videl doesn't really have any ki blast training. And so as Spopovich raises his hand and starts gathering this energy, she just kind of looks on and wondering what the hell is going on. And when the blast is fired, she doesn't raise a guard or anything because she doesn't know what the hell it is or how to even stop it. And so she takes the full brutal force of this blast head on.
Yeah. I mean, her only experience with this, she saw Goten blow up a rock with a ki blast. That was the only thing that she's seen for this,
and that
right?
Was, what is ki control? And then a child said, ki controls this and blows up a rock.
Yeah, it's so, there's almost no context for it at all in her mind.
So, Videl, she's gotten a hold of flying really quickly, but, I mean, she's still very much a novice when it comes to, I would say, the Z Fighter level of training that we've seen.
100%. She is impressive in her own right, 100%.
She's
too,
a natural martial artist. We even saw a couple of moves where she was able to kind of lock her heels behind Spopovich's and sweep his legs out from under him and things like that. She's had flares of brilliant martial arts, but I mean, she's just up against what seems like a indomitable tyrant.
It's funny because I would almost love to see Videl compete in the original Dragon Ball era tournaments and see how she does. I wouldn't put it past her to be comparable to, you know, Krillin, Goku, Master Roshi in the first tournament that they participated in. Maybe not beat them.
Yeah, I think she'd compete very well.
I think
the way I see it, probably Master Roshi would be the only person who I think would have her number. He is the master.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. The fight, though, kind of goes on. Really, I think it mostly ends on that, like, negative note as Spopovich, or at least this episode, as Spopovich delivers a few more heavy hits to Videl, and she doesn't have an answer for it. And it kind of takes us into the next episode to continue on with the fight.
Yeah, which is episode 112, Videl battered. Gohan's fury reaches its limit. And Videl's blows, as she continues her attack, seem to have less and less effect on Spopovich. Almost like there's not as much mustard behind them as there was at the start of the fight. And after launching a short offensive, Videl is knocked back hard with a kick and then delivered a vicious elbow to the ribs that knocks her hard into the arena. Spopovich towers over her as she's defenseless, and she begins delivering just vicious punch after punch into her abdomen, with blood spraying from her mouth. And I mean, she eventually breaks free from the assault, but she's in rough shape.
Yeah. I mean, you hear the audience, like, this is brutal. She's still fighting, though. She gets back up. She starts delivering hits to Spopovich's face. But again, Spopovich is just, it seems like he's not taking damage, or at least it's not phasing him. He basically grabs Videl by the leg and then throws her, launching her again to fall out of the ring. And you can tell in this moment, Videl even has some inner dialogue that she doesn't have the energy to fight back or to save herself in this moment. However, she does get saved from the ring out by Spopovich himself.
Yeah, his big meaty arm reached out and grabbed her by her ankle before she was able to hit the ground, and were met with this just wicked smile on his face as he just takes Videl and hurls her back into the arena. He's not ready to let this match end. And we have a moment where everyone's kind of just crossing their fingers, like, Videl, just stay down. Just let the announcer count you out. Just whatever you do, stop fighting. But I mean, she's defiant and she's proud, and she's not going to let that happen, and struggles back to her feet.
She's very proud. Like, there is an element of this fight that makes me love Videl even more, because she's so, like, everybody else is like, you're being stubborn, but she's a fighter, man. Like, she's not going to just give up. So she gives everything that she has, but it turns into her getting quite literally bent over Spopovich's knee and just pummeled like a piece of meat. He's just punching her in the face just for fun at this point. He could have won the match, but he's just a sadistic prick.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a giant man, right? His hand pretty much grasps the entirety of her head as he's delivering punch after punch into her. And the whole crowd is just watching this happen. There's screams of letting the match end. People are crying out in horror. It's a really gruesome scene.
It is. He kind of continues, like, holding her by the head, punching her, tossing her to the edge of the ring, but not knocking her out. Just kind of playing with her. Even the announcer gets up in Videl's face with the mic and is like, hey, I can stop this at any time. Just concede. We'll stop the match, and, you know, you won't have to deal with this anymore. Videl still will not give up. She's like, I can beat this guy. I know it. Gohan is screaming at her. Like, the audience is, I mean, they're on her side, but they don't want to watch this just pummeling of this person that they like look up to or care about or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, and the match has been one-sided for a little bit now. Videl really hasn't gotten in a good blow, and everything seems to be going in Spopovich's direction. And to really add to that thought, Spopovich stomps up to her, grabs Videl by her hair as she yells out in pain, and delivers another just brutal knee to her face, dropping her to the floor. This is when the towering brute decides to place his foot over Videl's head and begins to press down on her as she screams in pain.
Yeah, this sets Gohan off. Gohan can't hold in the rage anymore, and he full-on goes Super Saiyan, like knocking off his do-rag, kind of getting rid of part of his disguise in this moment. And in that moment, he's just darting forward into the ring, doesn't care about his place in the tournament anymore, doesn't care if he interrupts this fight anymore. Before he can jump in, however, our other muscled, bald fellow with the M on his head, Yamu, intervenes and tells Spopovich, "That's enough. This is not what we're here for. Finish the match."
Yeah, and this is where Videl is kind of kicked off the side of the ring, almost like a piece of garbage, right? Like, he has absolutely zero respect for her. And this is where Gohan lifts Videl from the ground, and he makes his threat towards Spopovich, letting him know that when they meet, he's going to even things out. And Gohan takes Videl and rushes her off to the infirmary for medical attention.
Yeah, and I think that Spopovich and Gohan are in the same bracket. Basically, Gohan has to beat Kibito, and then he would be paired up with Spopovich in this case. So, of course, as long as he wins that match, he's got a good chance at getting his revenge on Spopovich. I kind of want to talk about this fight a little bit, because I know that this, for the fan base, a lot of people don't like this, but I want to talk about kind of like what's going on in everybody's heads here, honestly, more than anything. So Videl is a fighter. Videl has something to prove as a young teenager and as somebody who has kind of grown up in the shadow of her father, the champion, the world martial arts champion who saved the world from Cell, according to him. So she's unwilling to accept help. She's unwilling to give up. She will basically get to the point where she's borderline on death's door before any of those other options, which in my mind makes sense for her character. And I actually like that people like I know some of the fan base will complain, like, why doesn't Gohan step in and do something? Why doesn't somebody else step in and do something? I like that they don't. Partly because
they wouldn't do it for each other.
That is very, very true.
They would absolutely let everyone else fight their own battles. So they showed her the same respect they would have showed any other Z fighter.
Exactly. And that's what I like about it, is that they are showing Videl respect as a fighter. Like, she's not a helpless woman. Yeah, she gets beat up by this guy, but she's a fighter. Like, she wants the chance to prove herself as a fighter just as much as anybody else does here. So I like that element of it.
Yeah, and I think it would be different if, say, she was trying to tap out or did tap out and then he continued his rampage, right? That would be different. But no, she held her ground and she kept fighting. So, I mean, it's, if she's not going to tap out, then it's still her fight. And I think it's a sign of respect when you let them actually take on their own battles.
I 100% agree. I mean, Goku gave his verbal acknowledgement that she was in danger. He didn't try to intervene. He basically just said she should give up or she should get knocked out. If she doesn't, she's going to be in danger. That's as much intervention as Goku would place on that, because again, he's another person who he understands what it's like to want to fight your own fight, want that one-on-one fight. Like, Goku was down three limbs when he fought against Piccolo in the tournament, and he had a hole through his chest. He was borderline dead, and he still refused people's help. Like, he was in a way worse situation than Videl was in this fight, where she's refusing help. So he gets it.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, well, Okay, I have some mixed feelings about Goku maybe not stepping in and listening to strangers here in a little bit, but at least in this moment, I do think that he, you know, he acknowledged her as a fighter and gave her the respect that she deserved. And I mean, it's Videl can take care of herself. Like she was out there, honestly, whooping a lot of ass. If it wasn't for this guy being an absolute freak, I think she easily would have won that fight.
She should have, right? She snapped the man's neck. Like,
yeah, like what else can you do?
Yeah, like she should have won that fight by all rights. But yeah, outside of some what we're going to find to be some outside interference with Spopovich, she should have won. But she gets taken off to the infirmary by Gohan. Mr. Satan basically sees her and tells Gohan to get lost. But they come up with a plan where Goku is going to use his instant transmission to go get some sensu beans from Korin for Videl.
Yeah, and that's more or less where this episode wraps up, is Videl's in the infirmary, Goku's going to go grab some magic beans, and then we've got, I believe, Gohan's up next in the next match here.
Yes, it takes a little while to get into it in the next episode, but I think it does kind of carry us into it.
Yes, which is episode 113, A Creeping Conspiracy. The target is Gohan. And like I said, the next match is about to begin, but Gohan asks everyone to kind of wait a minute since he's waiting for some special medicine to arrive to help fix up Videl. So the announcer man says, all right, we're going to wait a minute. And so everyone waits.
I kind of love the way that, so, I mean, most of that is fluff in the very beginning of this episode, but Goku eventually gets back with the sensu bean. Gohan takes it and then goes to give it to Videl. And both Mr. Satan as well as the doctor in there are like, you're not giving her that. We don't know what that is. Like, we've got medicine. She can, you know, she's already been treated. And then Gohan's like, yeah, I don't care. Videl, eat this. Videl very much trusts Gohan. She doesn't care. She's seen some weird stuff from Gohan and his friends. So she's like, okay, sure. If you say it'll help, it'll help. And sure enough, the sensu bean fully heals Videl.
Yeah, it's really funny to me. The Hercule and the doctor are both trying to keep this weird kid with a weird bean from feeding it to this very, very beat up girl. He ignores them, feeds the girl the bean. He runs out the door. She hops to her feet, and I guess science is actually a sham.
Magic trumps science any day.
So the whole thing's pretty comical. I do like the way that they set this up.
It's pretty good. Which turns into us moving forward with Gohan's match against our strange new competitor, Kabuto, and Gohan's cover is blown as some of his classmates recognize him because his hair is exposed, and so they start
cheering
with his name. He's just
wearing a pair of sunglasses, basically, right? That's the extent of his disguise at this point.
Yeah, they're trying to kind of figure out, like, is he Great Saiyaman? Did he just, like, enter as, like, almost like a cosplay of the Great Saiyaman? Like, is he actually a fighter? What's going on here? And they're quickly going to find out as Kabuto, upon the match beginning, asks Gohan to show him his Super Saiyan transformation.
Yeah, and Gohan's, I mean, rightfully a little weirded out by it, because one, how does this guy know about, you know, the Super Saiyan transformation? Two, why is he asking me to go into it? Like, if you know about it, you know it makes me powerful, so why would you want to bring that on yourself, right? And then, like, to make things even weirder, Piccolo even, like, yells from the sidelines, yeah, do it, Gohan. So he's getting all this input of just like, all right, I guess I'm going Super Saiyan.
And he does so. He even says that I can go even one level beyond Super Saiyan. So alluding to Super Saiyan 2, we kind of cut over to Shin talking with the rest of the Z Fighters. And Shin says, no matter what happens in this fight, I need you guys to not interfere.
Yeah, and everyone's rightly weirded out. And Shin even says that Gohan's going to be attacked, but don't worry, he probably won't be killed. They just want his energy.
I love that. Probably won't be killed.
I think he'll be fine. He'll probably he'll be all right. I don't know.
We do kind of move forward with this transformation, though.
Which, by the way, this is a great transformation. I want to point this out. I don't know why they put so much time into this transformation here, but it is really cool.
I was about to say the exact same thing. I mean, admittedly, from the Buu arc, I mean, we've gotten to see Gohan go Super Saiyan, but basically just like fighting villains and like criminals, so mundane villains and stuff. But I don't think we've seen him go Super Saiyan 2 since this arc started, or since he was Super Saiyan 2 against Cell. And so they really put a lot of respect on this transformation.
They really did. We see him starting to kind of turn, I don't know, like the typical yellow color. We see it start forming up around him. The music turns into this like pretty bomb-ass rhythmic chanting music, which really fits the scene. So Kai, great job here. 10 out of 10 music on this scene. We get excellent shots of his hair kind of beginning to stand up and twitching and sparking as it starts to stand on end. And then we see this explosion around him as his eyes go white and the arena erupting in his golden white light as the arena floor tiles begin floating in the air around him. It's really cool.
So good. Even like two other little details that I really like too is that his eyes change before his hair changes. Like his eyes change to that kind of like greenish teal color. And then when his hair is about to change, there's these beads of golden energy surrounding his hair just before it like shoots up in gold. It's beautiful, man. Like this is such a good transformation.
And it's a great transformation for somebody who is not even going to fight.
Because this results in exactly what Shin alluded to, as Spopovich and Yamu dive, like they leap at Gohan as if ready to grab him, and Gohan turns around like he's ready to handle these guys, probably no problem. However, Shin extends his hands out and locks Gohan in place for Spopovich and Yamu to stab Gohan with some bulbous device.
Yeah, it's Gohan is both, I guess, paralyzed from the Supreme Kai. He's in like a rear chokehold or something like that, a rear hold from Spopovich. And then Yamu's got, I don't know, it almost looks like something you'd water plants with. Shoved into Gohan's gut. And we see Gohan kind of yelling out in pain as everyone's watching this happen, right? It's I mean, Videl is back there because she got healed up and she's losing her mind and she has to be stopped as everyone's just watching this happen.
I love Goku grabbing Videl by the arms because he's already agreed to help Shin with whatever it is that he needs. It has been revealed to the rest of the group that Shin is the Supreme Kai at this point. So Goku assumes that whatever the Supreme Kai needs, that, you know, it's not going to be dangerous to Gohan or it's going to be beneficial. So the Supreme Kai, he presumes, is not a bad person. And so he grabs Videl because Videl doesn't know what's going on. She just knows that Gohan's been stabbed and is being attacked by multiple people in the ring now.
I mean, I can only think like, if I was writing an abridged moment of this, I'd be like, oh yeah, you want to use my son as bait and have him stabbed and all of his energy drained out? Yeah, he's gone through a lot of trauma already. What's a little bit more?
That would be a perfect abridged line for this scenario, because we even see the result is Gohan lying face flat on the ground and his skin is almost like this gray hue, having all his energy drawn out.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty brutal. And this is, I mean, I get why they did it, but it's one of those things where if that's my kid and I'm watching this happen to them, like, screw whatever your plan is, I'm stepping in. Like I get that you're the Supreme Kai or whatever, but I'm not sacrificing my flesh and blood. Screw that.
I mean, admittedly, Chi-Chi is in the stands and she's damn near crawling over top of people ready to get
in
there.
That's the right thing to do. That is the correct response. Chi-Chi is correct here.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I mean, I don't think that this is... It's weird, right? Because Goku... In Goku's mind, he's doing something to help the Supreme Kai, so he assumes that this is... Like, he knows King Kai is basically a protector of the world, the universe, so he assumes that's kind of like the same for the Supreme Kai. It's a tough situation, but I get it
logically, right? I understand logically. I agree if we're just following logic. But the second emotions come into play, like, I think for me, my emotional response to protecting my son would outweigh my logical ability to hold myself back. But I don't know. I guess everyone's a little different.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, I can express the logical points behind it, and Goku goes the logical route, strangely. But yeah, it would be a hard thing to watch.
I mean, I guess, I don't know. You do have the promise of the supreme god in your eyes, who I assume that you would just be like, oh, this guy could probably just like bring Gohan back. Like, it's literally, you know, no big deal for him.
I think that's where the logic is here. I think that there is even one point, I can't remember if it's before or after, but there is one point where Shin expresses that Kabuto will help Gohan. Like, Gohan will be fine.
Yeah, I think, yeah, he does mention that he can restore Gohan's energy or whatever. It's, he'll get Gohan back up, but still, I don't know. I mean, it would be a way different story if Goku steps in and kicks those guys' asses and then, well, things don't go forward.
Yeah, which Goku easily could do, but we're going to find out quickly here why Shin wanted this to happen, because Yamu and Spopovich fly off now having stolen Gohan's energy. And I think admittedly that's kind of where that episode... Oh, you know, no, you know what?
That is about where that episode ends. About the last thing that is said is the Supreme Kai asks the rest of the Z Fighters to covertly follow him and mentions that Kabuto is going to fix up Gohan. So he'll probably end up following too. So we're kind of left with this like some crazy shit's about to happen kind of cliffhanger.
Yeah. And that, I think that does, now that we know that Shin wants to follow these guys discreetly, that kind of does carry us into the next episode.
Yes, which is episode 114, The Terrifying Secret of the Majin the Mastermind Revealed. That's an interesting way to put that. But yes, we see Videl running out to Gohan's side, and we see her yelling for medics because everyone's just kind of standing around after watching these two men kind of sneak attack, rush, and possibly stab Gohan.
They don't know what to do, but yes, yeah, everybody's kind of in shock and awe. And this turns into Goku and Vegeta having a little exchange where Goku's like, screw the tournament, I want to see what's going on with this stuff. And Vegeta is basically like, Kakarot, you're not getting out of our fight. You're only here for a day. I will murder you if you leave.
I mean, it's very Vegeta, right? This is his one chance to get that grudge match and actually settle things and set his pride straight. And Goku is not getting out. I don't care. He will sacrifice the universe to make sure that happens.
Oh, yeah. Which is, I mean, that's an apt way to put it for the events that unfold following this. But Kabuto quickly says that he'll help Gohan. Pretty much all of our Z fighters, except for 18 and Gohan at this point, fly off to follow Shin. Kabuto does heal Gohan or refuel his energy, I suppose. And Gohan seems no worse for wear.
I do love that 18's like, you go ahead and go. Somebody's got to win the prize money. Which makes
priorities.
Sense. I don't think Krillin and 18 make any money, so this is probably a big deal for them and their family.
I mean, they're living with Master Roshi at Kame House, so there's no indication that either of them has any sort of job.
Yeah, I mean, what do you do with a resume of I trained with a hermit on an island in martial arts?
Or I got turned into an android by a crazy scientist and now I can blow up mountains.
that's a hard one to sell. I don't think if I saw that on a resume submitted to me that I would take it very seriously, but maybe I should. Maybe that's my problem.
That is your problem. You're missing out on more 18s in the world.
So we see Gohan restored by Kibito, who comments on how Gohan's energy reserves are much deeper than he ever could have expected, right? He kind of hints at that wealth of energy that we've heard of before with Gohan.
Right. And I mean, this turns into Kibito, Gohan, and Videl now flying off to follow Shin. Videl basically says, I'm not staying here. I want to know what the fuck is going on.
And the worst part about this is Mr. Announcer Man is devastated because all of his best fighters just flew away. And I feel so bad for this character.
Poor Announcer Man. I love him so much. And this was like, this totally made his day and now ruined it.
I mean, he didn't get very much out of them, but it was already probably a little too out of control, right? Like, all the things that have happened. I get that you want an exciting tournament, but just be thankful that it didn't go any further than this.
I mean, well, yeah. Yet.
Yes. But, yeah. So, with all the fighters flying away and Mr. Announcer Man devastated, this is where we flip over to the Supreme Kai giving the full backstory of everything that's going on. And go ahead and listen to me here and let me know if I missed anything, because it's kind of a whole tale. So,
you got this.
So the Supreme Kai came here in pursuit of a dark wizard, the son of the evil prodigal sorcerer Bibbidi, who had ravaged the universe aeons ago, utilizing his monstrous creation known as Boo. The Kais had done battle against Boo in the distant past, with four of them falling in the conflict. As Boo's power grew, Bibbidi became unsure of his control over the monster and began using a spell to seal his creation away as he traveled between worlds. Bibbidi had arrived on Earth, but fortunately, the Supreme Kai was able to defeat Bibbidi before Boo was able to be unleashed. However, Bibbidi's existence was only revealed... Bibbidi Bobbidi.
Boo.
Boo.
Yeah, Bibbidi's the dad, Bobbidi's the son.
Okay, Bobbidi's existence was only revealed recently, and he is racing against time to try and get his father's creation re-released onto the universe against Supreme Kai's will. There it is. All right, I think I more or less got it. Sorry, Bibbidi and Bobbidi are two of those names that I'm going to mix up.
I mean, we messed up with Gohan and Goten last time pretty regularly, both of us. So I just wanted to add to that, you pretty much hit all the details right on the head. The only little caveat is you had mentioned that there were four Supreme Kais that were felled by Boo and the wizards. The only caveat to that is that Shin basically expresses, I believe, that there used to be a total of four Supreme Kais, like three in addition to him. Three of them were explicitly killed. Like, he is the only one remaining.
Okay, yep, that's right. Yeah, it's, I mean, if anything, I think this story is really trying to get across just the sheer power and monstrous nature of the evil that they're about to encounter. Something strong enough to kill, I mean, multiple god-level beings is pretty terrifying.
Yeah, 100%. I think that there's, at some point in this exchange too, and this is a slight deviation from the original dub, which I wonder if it was a dubism, Shin expresses, he basically is giving like a measuring stick for his power, as he says, oh yeah, you know Frieza? I could beat Frieza in like a single blow, which is slightly different than what he said in the original Funimation dub, where he basically says something to the effect of, he compares his power to being like on par with Frieza, or like, I could beat Frieza. But the wording for this makes it feel like he's a level higher than what he expressed in the original dub to me. It's a minor difference,
considering Frieza's power level at this point is not very impressive.
Right. Like, Frieza at one point was minus super info, was arguably like the strongest fighter in the universe, right? So would have been impressive at one point, but yeah, there's quite a few people who have outdone that measuring stick at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's Frieza's measuring stick was immediately overshadowed the second we got into the Cell Saga, right? Like that immediately stopped mattering. And then we've had, I mean, multiple characters and then multiple transformations beyond that. I don't know how many multipliers above Frieza we are at this point.
I mean, the funny thing is that if Shin is about the same level as Frieza, he's probably arguably close to the same level as Goten and Trunks.
Oh, God. No, he's probably weaker than them. He's probably weaker than them.
He could be.
Yeah, okay. So that's a change. I never would have picked up on that because, I mean, I haven't seen the original dub in a couple years now, and I just don't remember that.
It's a subtle difference, and maybe they're trying to say that he's around the same ballpark in power, but I mean, the important part here is that we're going to quickly find out that Shin is vastly outshined by our Z fighters.
Yeah, and at the same time, Kobito fills Videl and Gohan in on the exact same story as they're catching back up to the other Z fighters. But it's in this moment that we see that Videl is kind of struggling to keep up. She's shielding her face from the wind as she flies as fast as she can, it seems like, anyway. And I do love this sort of detail because, I mean, she learned to fly so quick and she's trying so hard to keep up. But, I mean, she's years, if not decades, behind the training of most of these other fighters.
This is, you said it exactly right. I love this detail. This little sort of thing never comes up. Like, Videl is a great character in her own right, but Videl is a great character or a great tool for world building and storytelling. Because we, up until this point, never got to see people actively training to control their ki, which we get to see someone teach Videl how to do that. And we've never had this little detail of the wind in my eyes is hurting because I'm flying at Mach speed right now. Like, does this imply that you just get used to it? Does it imply that people use ki to like put a barrier over their eyeballs? It's so interesting to me, even though it's so insignificant.
But I mean, it's something that you would have to deal with somehow, right? Like, I mean, it's you're flying through the air at high speeds. The wind in your eyes would probably feel pretty miserable. So you have to have some sort of solution to that. But I mean, I'm guessing the other Z fighters probably were able to either, you know, come up with one because of all their previous training or just their slow, I guess, fall into flying. They were able to just kind of ad lib it and figure it out. Whereas Videl is just thrown into the deep end on this.
Yeah, 100%. This does, though, turn into a great piece of dialogue between Gohan and Videl as Gohan like recognizes this and tells Videl, hey, we need to move faster. And she's like, I can barely even keep up this pace. And I'm struggling with my eyes to even see what I'm doing. But it turns into Videl asking Gohan, like, oh, well, I saw you turn into that transformation. Does that mean you're the Golden Warrior? So that cat's out of the bag. And then Videl says, that also means then that you and your friends were the ones who were at the Cell Games who, you know, fought against Cell alongside my father, right? And Gohan has to concede that point too. And Videl finally, after all of this, puts all of these pieces together and says, so you guys were the ones who defeated Cell, not my father. It always seemed a little bit strange to me that he was able to defeat this alien monster by himself. But now that I've seen everything between you and your friends and family, I understand what happened.
Yeah, it's a great moment for Videl as her eyes are finally kind of opened to what reality really is, right? And it is a very big deal because I mean, it's learning the truth about not only your father, but also learning the truth about the entire world. Something that, you know, is so unbelievably big, right? It's this, I guess, fib or lie that the entire world believes, and even you believe, and you grew up believing it. And I mean, her ability to kind of accept this reality shows kind of her, I don't know, her grace, her ability to kind of reconcile the situation in a graceful way. And it almost seems like it kind of put things right for her, where she was kind of relieved that this feeling of doubt that she may have had was warranted. And now, like, all the pieces finally fit.
Yeah, it's... I mean, this also kind of expresses a shifting point in the story for us. Like, we, as the audience, have kind of been following Videl as she learns about this vast world that we, as the audience, already are privy to, but we get to see what it's like from the perspective of somebody who is arguably a normal person. And this is where she understands it. Like, she basically knows everything there is to know. And we're going to move away from that perspective of the normal person learning about this Z-Fighter world. And we're diving into the Z-Fighter stuff heavy from this point on.
Yeah, things are going to kick up because the Z-Fighters all kind of get together and they follow Spopovich and Yamu to Babidi's hidden base, which is actually a spaceship that's been shoved underground. And all of our Z fighters kind of show up, but stay out of sight and kind of watch as things unfold from a distance.
Yeah, I think the only thing that happens here at the tail end, if I remember correctly,
we get our first glimpse of the Dark Wizard.
Yes. So we basically get to see these two figures, actually maybe even three, but two important figures emerge from the ship as we see this kind of red, long fingernailed demon devil looking creature in like this big billowy blue outfit with this white cape.
He is comically devil looking, by the way.
He is. Like, I love his character design, but it is like straight Satan.
He's definitely very tall devil looking guy. Like, there's no other way to describe it. Oh, and he has a goatee.
He does. He has, like you said, he's comically like devil looking, like the black goatee, the whole nine yards. He looks intimidating, though. He's imposing.
Unlike the Dark Wizard next to him, who is this ugly, brown, short, wrinkly little shithead.
He looks like an old hairy potato. Like,
oh my god, it's so funny with these like big bulbous eyes that are kind of flanked on the sides of his head. Like, Babidi is one ugly character. And I actually like this character design, though. I love how freaking weird and just like malnourished looking he is.
Yeah, he's like scrawny little arms, big bulbous head. And once again, harkening back to even in the same, seven episodes, we've had three reveals of different characters who are all revealed in pairs. We've had Shin and Kabito, we've had Spopovich and Yamu, and we've had Deborah and Babidi. And for the most part, outside of maybe Spopovich and Yamu, each of those pairings, they are kind of opposites, right? Like, Shin is like this tiny little guy versus Kabito being this big dude. They have kind of like different personalities. Babidi is this tiny little creepy looking wizard guy, and Deborah is like this big, arguably handsome, charming and intimidating devil guy. Spopovich and Yamu look pretty similar. We just got like one big dude and one small dude.
Yeah, I mean, it's the one thing I will say, though, is that you notice that on all of Babidi's henchmen, there's the very iconic M scribed across all of their foreheads.
I think that I can't remember if it got touched on in their flying conversation for our Z Fighters or if it's in this episode, but either way, since we're pretty much covering the last episode here, it does get expressed from Shin or from the Supreme Kai that Babidi's magic can basically take hold on people who have dark desires in their hearts. I think it actually gets expressed here because they're talking about Deburra, the king of demons.
Yes, this is episode 115, the nefarious wizard Babidi and the demon king's Deburra's trap. And this is where we learn that this Deburra character is the demon king and that there are demon and angel worlds, like I guess you would imagine.
I love this. I love this world building. I desperately want Dragon Ball to dive deep into the demon world stuff. I think they do a little bit in the Xenoverse games and a little bit in the Super Dragon Ball Heroes manga plot lines. Here's hoping for Daima to have some demon stuff in it. But we basically learned that Babidi's magic can take hold on these people who have like evil in their hearts. So we learned that it would be easy in a weird way for him to take control over somebody like Deburra, who is the king of demons. Obviously there's evil in his heart, but Shin is afraid. You get the impression that Deburra is very powerful.
Yeah. And we get this weird, but also discomforting scene where Yamu and Spopovich, they hand over this colossal amount of energy in this device. And they're pumped. They're thinking that, you know, they did great work for their master. They're about ready to receive just incredible rewards. And after handing over the device, Babidi decides to reward them by killing them. And this is where we see Babidi using some of his crazy dark wizard magic on Spopovich by cursing his body and causing it to start expanding and just pushing outwards with power until at some point he finally erupts and explodes. It's a really gruesome death.
Yeah, this is grotesque and I love it. This feels like something you'd see in like the Akira movie with just like body horror as his body, like you could see his skull bulging as if his brain had expanded. It's not a pleasant death by any means, and it also results in Yamu trying to run away and escape, and instead of Babidi exploding him like an overfilled balloon, he tells one of his other henchmen that has stepped out of the ship, Pui Pui, to get in some target practice.
Yeah, so Pui Pui takes aim and smirks as much as Pui Pui can, and he fires off a shot, and Yamu's no more. And, you know, they're all cackling, like, this is fun for all of them. But it takes an even darker turn when Babidi reveals that he's actually aware that the Supreme Kai and the other Z Fighters are all lurking in the shadows around them. And he decides that he wants to add their energy to the resurrection of Majin Buu by luring them onto his ship. And this is where they all make their leave and Deburra is left outside to commence the trap.
And the trap is almost immediately sprung as Babidi.
I honestly forgot how this scene went down, and it caught me off guard how quickly it goes off the rails.
This is a great scene because Deburra goes on the offensive against, I mean, it's a group of seven for our Z Fighters here, and they're like the best of the best, basically. Outside of, unfortunately, well, starting with Kabito, Deburra just flies up immediately like into Kabito's face and full-on ki blasts Kabito into oblivion. There is nothing left of him. And this turns into a brief exchange where Kabuto basically spits on Krillin, and Piccolo kind of dives in to like get a few swings at Deborah and also gets spit on. And we find quickly that Deborah's spit turns people into stone.
Yeah. And as they start turning, we see the Demon King kind of laugh at them and tell them all to leave while they still have a chance. And he flees back into Babidi's ship. And it's at this point that Supreme Kai's kind of questioned about what's going on here, like what just happened. And we find out that, yeah, he's got the evil spit that turns you to stone. But theoretically, as long as the statues stay intact, they could be reversed back to their normal state if Deborah was defeated.
Right. And I mean, that's all Goku needs to hear, right? Like, that's motivation enough for him. He's like, cool, fighting? I can do that. Yeah,
fight
and
the guy.
It'll save my friends?
Yep. Fight the guy, beat the guy, save my friends. Got it. Going into the ship.
Easy. Done. And Shin, however, is trying to tell the Saiyans at this point to not go into the ship. Like, this is a trap. We need to fall back. We need to regroup. But Goku's not going to listen to that. Neither is Vegeta or Gohan, for that matter. Gohan wants to save Krillin and Piccolo. And so they fly directly into the ship, even knowing that this is probably some sort of trap.
Also, I think I like the way they did the scene with how Deborah chose his targets for the spit, because he kind of took stock of, like, all right, who are the people who I think are weaker, and I'll turn them to stone to motivate the people with more energy to come inside.
It's kind of a funny thing, too, though. Like, I mean, he wipes out Kabuto because Kabuto's not important. He turns Krillin to stone. There was a part of me that was thinking, like, it's interesting that he turns Piccolo to stone, too. And I mean, I get it. They're supposed to be they are the weaker ones, and they're supposed to be the motivation. But Piccolo's not weak, man. Like, Piccolo could be a lot of energy for Majin Buu.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's a clever plan, and it's the extra motivation, right? It's multiple, right, of my friends. We're getting everybody on board at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Plus just the matter of numbers, I would imagine, having to deal with.
So, yeah, the Z-Fighters are on board. They enter the ship, and we see Babidi's first henchman, Pui Pui, reveal himself, and he announces the rules of the spaceship. Each floor contains a nastier surprise than the last, and the Z-Fighters have to fight their way through progressively more difficult challenges before they are able to make it to the Dark Wizard Babidi. And so the Z-Fighters begin playing rock, paper, scissors to see who's up first.
Hell yeah. I love this. Like, to me, this is just classic shonen. Like, on one hand, it almost feels silly, right? Like, if you think about this in a real world perspective, that they've entered into the spaceship, it has multiple floors, each floor has one fighter they have to face.
Your friends' lives are on the line right now.
Yeah. But I deeply love this. This is very much like what I expect to see out of a shonen, where we're just going to see these one-on-one fights, and we're going to see them get progressively harder as we move forward.
I mean, it's fun, and it's one of those things where I keep getting this thing in my head where I'm like, yep, quit basing the fate of the world on death matches, because it's happening again.
Thank you, Abridged Trunks.
Oh, so we play rock, paper, scissors. It takes about 50 tries for a winner to come out on top, but we do eventually get a winner, and the Prince of All Four Heads steps forward to do battle.
Yeah, and I think that pretty much wraps up our episode, kind of on that cliffhanger, as we get to see this fight is going to be one-on-one, Pui Pui versus Vegeta. Shin seems scared. Shin seems like he's basically saying, like, Babidi only gets the finest henchmen, and we need to fight together. Like, you guys are going to fight one-on-one? What are you doing?
Yeah, and on top of that, it's he had advised them to not go into the ship, that this is a trap, this is a bad idea, this is going to wake up Boo, and no one listened to him.
I mean, Vegeta has typical Vegeta energy to him in this exchange, right? Because it has been told to our Z Fighters already that if they get hurt, if they get damaged, that damage is going to get transferred directly to Majin Buu for his resurrection through the ship. However, Vegeta basically just says, oh, so if I don't get damaged, you don't get any energy. Easy.
It's pretty funny. And I mean, he's got that cocky attitude. His plan is to go through all these fights without taking a bit of damage. I love the ego of that. And I mean, why wouldn't you do it?
It's prime Vegeta, and I love that. So yeah, it's his mindset is, well, if I whoop your ass and you don't touch me, you're not going to get anything out of it, so who cares?
And I can only imagine Supreme Kai sitting there going, I can't believe this cast of characters I was dealt to try and save the world with. Oh, God.
I love that, too. Like, I love the comedy in that, right? It's great. Especially, well, we won't get to it today because this is going to be the last episode that we are covering, but especially getting to see what Shin thinks of their power as he gets to see the full extent of their power.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, we've got this divine being of the highest level stuck in a basement with Goku, who grew up on a farm, Vegeta, who has the largest ego in the entire universe, and then Gohan's actually relatively normal. I would say Gohan's a pretty normal guy, despite probably all the trauma.
Yeah, I was about to say, given all of his trauma, he turned out pretty all right.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's, I don't know. Dragon Ball does a good job of having larger-than-life characters and just seeing them all assembled like this. The Supreme Kai is just a great, I guess, foil to all the other characters that we have here. So, I mean, I love his character. I also kind of love the way he kind of develops as we get to know him more.
I mean, I agree. Akira Toriyama has done an excellent job. Again, a lot of people have issues with the Buu arc. There are some incredible writing choices in here, though. Like, we already talked about getting to see what the world looks like from a normal person's perspective, learning about the world that our Z Fighters kind of exist in, almost separate from the norm, and getting to see that through Videl's eyes. Now we're also getting to see what it looks like from the God of God's perspective, who is on this backwater planet and coming to terms.
They even describe Earth as like a, you know, in the middle of nowhere, right? Earth is a really not important place. Even the gods recognize it's not an important place.
100%. And this God of Gods is here on this backwater planet coming to terms with the fact that there are people way stronger than he is on this planet.
It's quite funny. And I mean, you know, to kind of go back to the beginning of this episode when Supreme Kai first met Goku, and the way he introduces himself when he mentions he's heard the legend of Goku, right? And so I can't help but feel like he actually went to seek out Goku for this, since he had heard about him.
It's a weird thing, right? Like, we don't get we kind of skipped over it, but there's a brief snippet of King Kai, like, oh, that's the Supreme Kai? Oh, well, I've never met him before, so the Supreme Kai, Shin, did not get this information through King Kai, but it almost feels like the Supreme Kai must have at some point, like, looked in on what was happening on Earth.
Something like that, word gets around in Otherworld, so it's just possible that that he just heard about it through the grapevine, right? Like, Goku is friends with so many, like, weirdly important people. Even if they weren't the same level of Supreme Kai, they were still important people. What's his name? The guy with the book. Is it King Yama or something like that?
King Yama.
Yama, that's it. Like, that seems like a guy who, I don't know, might occasionally talk to important people and kind of spread the word around.
For sure. Yeah, and that's a good point, too. There's a good chance that just word of mouth in Otherworld is how the Supreme Kai learned about Goku. This I mean, we're going to kind of dive into the last part of the world tournament arc here next time. But how did you feel about these seven episodes as a whole, Dayton?
I actually really enjoyed these seven episodes, this selection of episodes. It's the first, I would say, bit of episodes we covered of the final chapters of Dragon Ball Kai. There was a lot of filler, I felt. This feels a lot better. But, I mean, I will say, I can't tell how much they're cutting at this point. And I don't know if that's because they've done a good job editing it, or if maybe this part of the arc was actually done fairly well the first time around. So, either way, I mean, I'm enjoying most of the content I'm seeing.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, at this point, this chunk of episodes, it doesn't feel like they're cutting much, but also the pacing feels good. Like, it doesn't feel too drawn out. It doesn't feel too breakneck speed and fast. Honestly, I think that this part was just done pretty well in the original, but maybe they are trimming the fat at the edges that we're just not remembering.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they've got to be, because we've had a couple weird episode end and start points, so they've got to be trimming something,
true,
right?
Yeah, good point. I like these ones a lot too. You actually, and I have been bashing the music for Dragon Ball Z Kai quite a bit. You mentioned something about the music in this one, in one of these episodes, being pretty good. So did you actually notice, do you know where the music in this set of episodes comes from? Because it shows up somewhere else in the Dragon Ball.
Oh, not a clue.
Media.
Not a clue.
It's from Super, which was really interesting to me.
Oh, that's really weird. I mean, there are some songs in Super that were played so many times that I feel like if I would have heard it, it would have definitely pulled me like into it. But I don't, they must have just used a better selection, I guess, or used them better than they did in Super or something, because I don't, for some reason, it didn't stand out to me.
I'll have to send you some clips, because yeah, there's a couple of soundtracks that were used in these sets of Kai episodes as well as Super. Honestly, I think that they were produced around the same time. I think it was around 2014, if I'm not mistaken. So it kind of makes sense. It's just funny that they had that overlap. And admittedly, I mean, the early Super music was not very good, but I liked the music that they chose for these sets of episodes and kind of overlapped with Super. So I thought they did a much better job with their music.
I mean, like I said, the Super Saiyan transformation was like weirdly really good. And the music they chose for it matched perfectly. It was this kind of rhythmic driving beat with chanting as Gohan goes through one of the best Super Saiyan transformations that I can't believe I didn't remember.
It's a good one, man. I like that one a lot. They really
they dolled it up really well. As far as just the series goes, like the anime series, fantastic. I mean, the movies are on a whole different level nowadays, but just going back to the series, it's in its own category.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. But yeah, these episodes are good. It's setting up the conflict moving forward. We didn't get a ton of like drag out knockout action. Probably the most action that we got was kind of the Videl beatdown. But even that has its own details that I like about it. Beyond that, I think most of the action is going to be reserved for the next set of episodes. But
yeah,
this is a good set.
We're about to really dig into it. I think this is why the first part of Kai's World Tournament arc feels so slow, because this feels like the actual build up to the real story, right? This is now we're learning about these characters and the Supreme Kai, and we're learning about, you know, Boo and Babidi, and like we're actually getting into the meat of it. Whereas the first chunk of episodes that we covered, it was mostly just Gohan being in high school, which is fine. there are some episodes in there that I wouldn't, you know, I like the content they covered, but we could have trimmed that down and then jammed a two or three of those episodes behind these ones and just gone from there.
Yeah, I very much agree with you. I mean, we talked about it in the last podcast episode, but there was too much fluff left in there. So we've already discussed that there are two different versions or cuts of Dragon Ball Z Kai, the final chapters or the Buu arc or whatever the hell they want to call it at this point. We kind of flubbed the episode titles last time because of that, but it, like the episode titles that you were giving off, Dayton, it gave the impression, and I haven't had the chance to look, but it gave the impression that the other set of episodes, the other cut, really cuts out a lot of that Gohan in high school arc and really like dives into the world tournament much faster.
I was kind of discovering that too, where because a couple of the episode names, you know what happens in that episode, and then I was reading them two or three episodes earlier than we were getting to them, and so I was getting really thrown off by it.
I'd be curious. I want to go out and try to find that version just to see how different the beginning chunk is. Because I have a feeling the beginning chunk, like the high school arc, is where they cut most of the additional episodes out.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, there's some great character building moments in the high school arc. It's important. There are some scenes that I would not want to be removed. But I mean, do we really need the whole episode of the guy stealing a pterodactyl? Come on.
Exactly. Like, and it's like you said, it's important mostly for like, we want to refamiliarize ourselves with Gohan as he's gotten older. We need some bonding. We need some connecting between Videl and Gohan because it's originally tension and conflict, but that kind of turns into something else as they get to know each other.
That's what we're seeing, that turning in the episodes we covered tonight, right? We're starting to see whether Videl is now trusting Gohan rather than being mistrustful and I guess keeping an eye on Gohan. Like, it's now Videl is more or less, I mean, it's the Senshu Bean moment, right? Whereas Videl before probably would have said, no, like, I'm not taking some weird bean from some weird, you know, egghead. Whereas now she's like, yeah, sure, I trust you, I'll eat this bean.
There's a lot of growth on Videl's part, right? And in a pretty short amount of time. And having that development is important. So I definitely get that. There's even the moment, I mean, Videl even goes so far as, like, you kind of get the impression that these two are, they like each other, like, romantically. There's even a moment where Videl says, I think my dad is just going to have to get used to Gohan being around, which is, like, it's a good line.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, and you just see the back and forth emotions, right? It's like, all right, these two are falling for each other, and Krillin is just hitting the nail on the head, right? Like, Krillin is just calling these things out, like, see where this is going. Uh-huh, when you guys get married, am I right?
Krillin's not subtle at all. Nope. He's sticking it to Gohan. I love it. It almost feels like Krillin and Gohan have been, like, close, have, you know, fought for their lives together, but Krillin's much older than Gohan. It feels like an older uncle kind of ribbing
really
and poking
does.
Fun.
It feels like the exact kind of relationship you would expect from your dad's best friend. Like, it's what I don't know. It's pretty wholesome. It's kind of fun being able to kind of see everyone interact with each other in a non-fighting environment.
Yeah, I agree. It just needs to be, the first few just need to be tightened up a little bit. Not in this chunk.
It could have been a little bit more concise, but, you know, this chunk brought it around. This is a very good chunk. And I mean, there's some, like you said, there's character comedy that is in line with the character, like with Goten and Trunks, and like we talked about with Krillin. These are things that I'm really appreciating now after watching how Super handled it. And so I'm kind of glad we started our instant transmission podcast off with going through Super, because now I can go through all these other episodes and really pay attention to, like, you know, why did it feel off when I watched Super? It's like, oh, because they actually did a great job with it in the original series, because the characters would actually act that way and they don't seem like idiots. Like, it's actually fun humor.
I completely agree. I think you and I, Dayton, especially prior to jumping into the Buu arc, felt differently from one another about the Buu arc, because I actually really like it. There's a lot that I like. I understand it has its problems, but I think that there's a lot of stuff that's really good in here. And it's fun to hear you at least appreciating the good elements of it, even if you don't necessarily like it as a whole. But I think for me, even similar to what you were saying, having watched Super and going back into this, I really, even more so, am appreciating the great character writing and the great beats and elements that they have in the Buu arc. Goten and Trunks are phenomenal. They're great written characters in here. I love them. They have purpose. Goku is fantastic. I love martial arts expert Goku. I love Goku acting like an adult in some way. He's not the brightest person on the planet, but he's an adult. He's in his 40s, I think, at this point. Like,
well, there's also, for me personally, there's also this part of me that really wants to see Goku eventually become the next Master Roshi. Like, mm-hmm. I would love to see Goku make that transition to where I think he'll always be fighting, but his primary purpose isn't getting stronger, but to help others reach their max potential, right? To help maybe his kids or other people's kids along their fighting journey. And so these are some of those snippets into that where Goku's able to kind of pay attention. And we saw some of it in the Cell Saga with him training Gohan and paying attention to the way everyone was fighting and coming up with all these plans. I like seeing combat genius Goku on display, not just necessarily savant Goku.
I completely agree. Boo Goku might be one of my favorite Gokus, period. Like, it's really, really good. We'll kind of get to see that kind of teacher in Goku come out a little bit more as we continue through the Boo arc as well. But man, I could gush about this chunk of episodes and just continue going on.
They're really good. It is probably some of the best just character development episodes in all of Dragon Ball, or just, I don't know, wholesome episodes. I don't know what you want to call it, but it's nice seeing all the characters being themselves after a lot of episodes of just fighting.
yeah. I think that's an important point, right? Because we are kind of harping on the previous chunk of episodes where we had downtime with Gohan in high school, and we're saying, like, you know, it's, they need to cut a lot of that. There's too much fluff. But we like, both you and I like some of the downtime moments. It's just there are good downtime moments and there are bad downtime moments. Like like you said, the stealing the pterodactyl stuff, like, it's not significant. It doesn't feel important. But like Krillin ribbing Gohan for his new girlfriend is great. And Goten and Trunks stealing Mighty Mass costume is great. I love those beats. There are some that are well done and some that are not.
And they don't, like, even though they're not necessarily relevant to the main story, they don't get in the way of it. And that's important. We're not spending an entire episode on Mighty Mask, right? This is just something fun that's happening in the background. Like watching this weird looking guy in a costume, hand a cup under his shirt, and then that cup drop out empty onto the ground, just out from between his legs, is pretty hilarious.
It's such a great gag. It's a fantastic visual gag. I love that stuff. Like, I want more of that stuff for sure. But I'm going to, if I keep going, I will just continue gushing about these. These are like, this chunk of episodes is like a 10 out of 10 for me. I think that's most of what I had to say about it, though, besides just kind of rambling at this point. Was there anything else that you wanted to talk about these episodes, Dayton?
They're really fun episodes. For me, my only critique a little bit with some of this stuff that's happening in the Buu saga is the story feels really railroaded to me. Like, it doesn't feel like it's a very natural progression, like going into the Buu fight. It feels like, hey, these characters showed up and we're going to the Buu fight. I'm just like, okay.
That's an interesting point. I want to touch on that briefly before we wrap up, because I mean, I think that is some people's issue with the Buu saga is that it feels it feels kind of directionless, right? Like, you feel, especially in the Saiyan arc, the Frieza arc, and even the Cell arc to a lesser degree, you feel like there's a goal, like there's a destination in mind. And the Buu arc, that is one of its bigger problems, is it almost never feels quite like that, or you don't know what that destination is, I guess.
Yeah, like it's like we're all following Supreme Kai off to fight this thing because he told us to, is kind of what's happening right now, which is, for me, that doesn't make the stakes very compelling. And like, you know, this evil monster just so happened out of all the planets in the universe happened to be buried on Earth, and just like, I don't know, it's the setup is not my favorite. I do like a lot of characters. I like Babidi. I like Supreme Kai. I like Kibito's kind of stone-faced man, but that's fine. I like a lot of the characters. I like a lot of the downtime character moments, but I don't feel bought into the situation yet, I guess. Like, it's not like when we went to Namek and you're just like, oh yeah, we don't have Dragon Balls, let's go to Namek, and then, oh crap, all this stuff is happening. Or like, hey, some aliens showed up and they're your brother, and now we're going to introduce you to this whole universe sort of thing. It's, I don't know. There's not the same kind of buy-in where I don't know where this is going, or I haven't been given too many reasons to actually care about this fight.
I'll give you that. And I think that that's a fair criticism. What I will say about that, though, is that one of the things I like about this setup is I like that we harken back to the world tournaments, like we're pulling something in from original Dragon Ball, honestly, and it's used as a red herring. It's basically like, oh, you know, here's this tournament. You guys are going to get to watch this fun tournament and see, you know, these big fighters with their big powers engage one another. And then that
I feel
rug
like we had
is
a big tournament not long ago, though.
Oh, well.
You know, a certain green man hosting a certain tournament.
It's Cell Games is a little bit different, but you're right. Yes, you're right. But that tournament rug gets ripped out from underneath us, and that part to me is fun about this, but I understand why it can also be unsatisfying as a plot device.
Yeah, like I said, I like most of this. It's just I don't have that big buy-in yet. I don't know why I care about going to this battle, other than I like watching battles. I don't have very much emotional investment into what's happening at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason they really give is that there's this wizard who's going to unleash this endlessly powerful monster that will, I don't know, wreak havoc on the worlds, like destroy the world, ruin the universe. It's ambiguous and we don't know anything about them, so we don't care that much yet, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know, maybe we'll keep watching forward and I will have missed some details that I don't remember very well, and I might change my mind because it's already a little bit better than what I remembered watching, but I mean, I don't know, we'll see. Maybe Super just makes everything a little bit better.
It's kind of funny in that regard, right? Where we're like, well, Super was a thing, but at least Super, even though it was pretty meh, it helps us appreciate Dragon Ball Z.
It's a measuring stick moment.
Yeah. A very meta measuring stick moment.
God, I can't wait to go back and update my Super series review.
Ooh, and compare it to Z at this point. That would be funny to revisit that after watching Z. Oh man,
gosh, that'd be wild. We'll have to see about that. That's a lot.
I would consider it. I don't even think that we were very generous with Super when we just watched Super. So we might really put the hurt on the rankings if we watched it, or if we revisited it after Z.
Oh, jeez. All right. Anyway, this is a Dragon Ball fan podcast, so let's end on a good note. I actually really enjoy these chunks of episodes. I thought they were great. I love the character development, and the characters they introduce here are pretty rad. So big plus, big thumbs up out of me.
I agree. Again, I could harp about these episodes in a positive way for hours. I I like Babidi. I like the downtime moments. I like Videl. I really like Deborah's introduction. I really like his character design. And I'm very excited, even though I already kind of know the story, I'm excited to kind of dive into the nitty-gritty moving forward for Babidi and Boo. But I think, very long-windedly, that's going to be it for this episode of Instant Transmission, where we discuss everything Dragon Ball. This has been your host, Todd.
And Dayton.
And because we are terrible at promoting ourselves...
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad you're doing this.
We are on Patreon and Twitter. If you want to help us make better content, including contributing to our editing process, you can find us at patreon.com/ITDB podcast. And over on Twitter, for however long people keep using that platform, at x.com/ITDB podcast. Yay, promotion!
We did the dang thing.
With that said, be sure to join us next time as we rock Babidi's boat in part 3 of the World Tournament arc. Our Saiyan trio has their sights on Babidi and Deborah in order to save their friends and prevent the revival of the terrible Majin Buu. But they're going to have to fight through Babidi's gauntlet first.
Ooh, deep spaceship.
That's right. Can our heroes put a stop to Babidi's plans? What kind of creature is this Majin Buu? Do you think Babidi knows how to cast Avada Kedavra? Find out next time. And to all our fellow Dragon Ball fans, stay safe out there and remember to keep rocking the dragon.
Yeah, baby, we can go as long as we want now. No time limits. Woohoo!
No time limits, baby!